Welcome back to Monday Night Talk, and this is going to be a very unique. This is going to be two segments. First segment will feature, we're going to talk real estate, and who would we speak with about real estate? Well, of course, we would have our very own Sharon McNamara. She has her own show here every Saturday, along with Cindy Ford, who is her co-host, and also one of the brokers who is with Boston Connect.
Yes, absolutely. Cindy's an associate broker.
Associate broker.
She just got her broker's license, actually.
Okay. So we've done this. You know, what we try to do here at Monday Night Talk, and Sharon, I want to say, is probably one of the first hosts that I had when I took over the show from Bob Hedlund, to try to cross-pollinate with other radio shows and have other hosts on. And I believe Sharon might have been the first host that I had on a couple of years ago when we talked real estate. We had Bernie Hassan in, and we talked about real estate. And, of course, you can't talk about real estate and real estate numbers and trends without bringing in a guy who is so well-known for his numbers, and that's none other than Mr. John Buckley. He is the Plymouth County Register of Deeds, and he does a fantastic job. And you can hear him on. He's usually on with Dave Skill, every week, every month?
Monthly.
All right, it sounds like it's every week. But still, it's good because people get an idea of what's going on, what's trending in the market, where medians are, what's going on as far as foreclosures, and you get an idea. And a lot of those numbers are very important. But before we get into that, and before I jump ahead here, the second half or the second segment that we're going to do, so the first part will be to talk about 2015, kind of do a recap. We should have done this back, maybe February. Things kind of get crazy. We utilize this program for so many things. We do political forums. As you know, we've had different races for an open state rep seat, as Mike Brady was elected as a state senator. And, of course, Bob Hedlund turned into a mayor in Weymouth, so that meant his seat was open. So we've been busy with this program, utilizing it for other vehicles to kind of get the information out to the listeners, but we're doing it now. So the first part, the first segment, of course, we'll talk about 2015 and the trends. Second half, we'll talk 2016 first quarter, how it's looking, and we'll also give you a little bit of insight as to, you know, the spring market and some of the things to keep in mind. And again, we got professionals here who know it, know the numbers, know what to look for. If you're somebody who is looking for a home, if you're somebody who's looking to sell your home, we got people here who know the things that you need to keep an eye on. So we'll deal with that. But I wanted to connect with Sharon because Sharon and I it seems as though we have similar musical tastes. And I say that in jest because her and I actually attended a concert together, kind of.
Yeah.
She didn't realize it was Diana Ross.
Diana Ross.
It was a fantastic show. And you know, when you go to it, and it was at the Wang?
It was. And we were literally in the same aisle.
Same aisle, like four seats down. And it's like, and it wasn't me who noticed it. It was my girlfriend, Sandy. She's like, hey, isn't that Sharon? I go, yeah, it is. And I'm like, it looks like her. And I didn't have my glasses on that day.
But you didn't even say hi to me, which is like, that was the weird thing, right?
So, well, I didn't, because you came in, I think you came in another way. You didn't come in our eye. You came in the other way.
We were trying to sneak in a little bit.
Oh.
When Diana Ross says, I start at this time, she means it.
Yeah. Yeah, she doesn't mess around. But also the way it kind of, when you're leaving, it's kind of chaotic when you leave.
Yeah.
So there was really no time to go over and go, hey, Sharon, like I said, I didn't have my glasses on. I didn't want to be tapping something. Oh, it's not you.
Yeah.
But I didn't find out. I didn't really confirm it until a day later when you posted pictures that you're like, oh, I met Diana. I'm like, oh, hey.
I know. Were you at Barry Manilow? Because I was there.
And no. Then,
what about Zach Brown? Well,
no.
I did Barry Manilow.
I love Zach
with
Brown.
My mother.
I would have went.
Did you go to Zach Brown last
year? No, I would have.
Do you have your tickets for this year?
No.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to.
So don't jump ahead here. But so there was another celebrity, somebody musically. I mean, earlier this year, you had David Bowie, Glenn Frey, who passed away, and Prince.
Yeah.
Prince dying suddenly. And, you know, some people kind of, you know how people are on social media. Either people are, you know, they realize that it's somebody who's significant. Prince, I thought, was something significant for people of our age.
Mm-hmm.
He was kind of like the Elvis of our generation.
Absolutely.
What is it about? What was it about Prince that you remember so well? I mean, how is he woven into the fabric of your life as somebody, you know, growing up or listening to his songs and stuff?
Well, it's amazing because I did post on Facebook yesterday. So we're Facebook friends, so we always know what each other are doing.
Yeah.
And I put on there, literally, I absolutely know how my mother felt the day that Elvis died.
Yeah.
I'll never forget where I was when I found out. I found out sort of late in the day. I can't believe no one called me. But I love some of the posts that are going on underneath that post that are saying, Sharon, I remember you at the St. Margaret's dances in, you know, 9th grade or whatever it was, 10th grade, singing like I Would Die for You and just like pointing my fingers and everything. So, but my biggest memory is the movie Purple Rain.
Sure.
I am not kidding you when I say I must have seen that movie 10 to 15 times. And back then, you could get away with a little bit more. I won't go into full details because my dad might be listening to your show tonight. But we, like, literally snuck Chinese food into the movie theater, and we would, like, watch the Prince movie over and over and over again. And he was just so good. What I loved about Prince, too, was I'm a big advocate of be whoever you are.
Yep.
And that's okay with me. And I think that he did that through his whole career. And he helped a lot of people along the way with their careers, which sure. I commend him for that.
Oh, yeah. The stories, I'll throw it out there. Kathy D was telling a story a couple of days ago about Stevie Nicks, the song Stand Up.
Yep.
And, or Stand Back.
Mm.
And how he actually played synthesizer. He played, you know, was writing the song. And she goes, you know who would be good? It would be Prince. And I guess she called him up. See, I was thinking of you. You know, I'm writing this song, and you know, I just thought you would be really great at doing playing the keys, or you know, just your style. And I guess he came over, played the song, got up and left. Now we never got credited as far as the music goes, but that's the type of guy he was. He did that with a lot of different artists, where he would he would show up, he would help them. And he didn't stick around and try to, you know, soak up, you know, the applause or anything. He did it. He left. That's just how he was.
Very humble. Yeah. And he self-taught on all of those instruments, which is amazing.
His parents, both of his parents were, musically adept as well. I mean, they were so good. I mean, I think the father was classically trained, or he was trained as far as piano goes, and his mother was musically trained as well. So, I mean, he had it. He was, you know, second generation.
Mm-hmm. And let's not forget, like, Chaka Khan. I mean,
he wrote her song.
Yeah, I know. He was so good. He wrote
Worst Day of the Time. I mean, he was actually credited as Jamie Starr.
Hmm.
It was like his side project.
Yeah. He's great.
So, it's kind of sad. So I want to at least commiserate with you for half a second on air during this segment, knowing that we have similar tastes.
Yeah. And I'm really sad, too, though, because I think about somebody posted something great on Facebook and they said, you know, for our generation of who we grew up with, we lost a king, Michael Jackson. Yep. We lost a queen, Whitney Houston. And now we've lost the prince. Yep. So I just thought that was the best way to sort of word all of that. And it's.
But I think that happens throughout the times. You know, Ed Perry, I mean, he could probably tell you about, you know, the day when Big Bopper and you know, Buddy Holly, you know, when they died. And he goes out to Iowa every year because that's his thing. You look at when we saw the loss of Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin. I mean, I think it transcends time that you lose in clumps. You lose these major artists that we connect through music.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah,
and folks, this has nothing to do with the segment. we just want to take a half a second just to kind of talk about it because that's just how radio programs go. So let's first talk about the trends, and this gives us an opportunity to bring in a great gentleman, John Buckley, who has been very patient and a guy who's also very generous when it comes to sharing information that he and his office gather. I know that they posted on the Plymouth County Register of Deeds website. So if you want to see his annual report, you could do it. If you could, just to kind of start off this segment, give us a little bit of a snapshot of some of the stuff that we saw during 2015 in comparison to 2014, if you will.
First of all, Kevin, it's always great to be with you. And I'm here with two great real estate people that
fantastic people
have been on the show recently. With Sharon's show. So let's talk about the end of 15, because I know that's what you wanted me to do.
Yep.
And the end of 15 really kind of set the start for 2016, and 2015 was a good year. We ended up with 8% higher sales, more deeds recorded than in 2014. Sales value went up by 10%, $3.429 billion compared to $3.11 billion. Sales prices went up 2%, and mortgage volume went up really significantly, 25%. So people took advantage of low interest rates to refinance as well as purchase homes. So all in all, other than the foreclosure issues, the real estate market was very strong in 2015. It set a strong standard to start 2016.
For people who don't understand, what is the general importance of the real estate market and how well it does, the ebb and the flow of the real estate market? Again, just for those folks who don't understand why we keep an eye on these things.
Well, clearly you don't have to go too far back to realize what a bad real estate market does to people. If you go back to 2008, 2007, when so many people that had refinanced three or four times found themselves in deep trouble and lost their homes because they had overextended some of their loans. Things happened along the way. Illnesses, lost jobs, issues that really people never expected to happen. And because of that decline in the demand, the whole real estate market really fell really hard. Mm-hmm. And the number of foreclosures back in those days and foreclosure notices that led to foreclosures were really damaging to communities. A foreclosure can really impact property prices, they say, within a mile of the foreclosure. So I think that really put a lot of communities in risk. And so the fact that real estate values are up, the job market is much, much better than it was
stronger,
a few years ago. A healthier real estate market is great for communities, great for neighborhoods, and great for homeowners.
Are we still seeing high numbers for foreclosures, especially in communities like Plymouth and Brockton? I know conversations that I've had in the past with you that those were the high water marks in the county when it came to foreclosures. Of course, then in the other communities, it would be somewhat lower. Was it the same in 2015?
Well, clearly the communities that have struggled the most with foreclosures start with the city of Brockton. Our second highest community for foreclosure notices and deeds is Plymouth, right. And the third is usually Wareham. And they're just more working-class communities, and those were the people that found themselves hit hardest by job loss and overextended themselves in terms of borrowing, and those continue to be the highest communities with those problems. And I think what's going on right now, as we're in April now, but I'm looking at our March reports, there were 112 foreclosure deeds in 2015, March 2016 rather, 194 in 2015. So you can see it's gone down, but that's still a significant amount. Mm. And the foreclosure notices in 15 were 223 foreclosure notices. However, in 2016, they bumped up to 350. So a lot of the lenders are clearing out their files. They never had the staff to deal with it. They're moving forward and basically trying to clear out their files and get rid of some loans that people haven't paid in years.
This is where I turn my attention to Cindy Ford and Sharon McNamara. And I can let you guys choose as to who wants to answer this. Give me your thoughts on 2015. What was it like for someone who was a broker or somebody who had dealt in the real estate market, if you will? How do you want to answer this?
Let me start.
Sharon, yeah, sure.
Yeah. So one of the things that I feel with 2015 that we have to remember is we started off the year really, really tough.
Oh, yeah. We had snow.
Yeah, we had horrible. 8 feet of snow, January, February, and it was taking March.
It seemed like it was like 15 feet. But
yeah, I mean, my office literally had 8 feet of snow in front of it. I felt like I was inside an igloo when I sat in that office. That was a really scary time, especially being the broker owner of a company that nothing was selling. What ended up happening as the snow melted, it became very fast and furious. So our market caught up I mean, according to, you know, John's statistics, we did very, very well finishing out that year. We beat and surpassed 2014, 13, 12, you know, so that was really good.
But the first quarter was somewhat tough, though, right? Because we saw what happened in January, February, and March. We were buried in snow, and I would think that that would have an impact on open houses and showings.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I felt there were two things. For sellers, they just couldn't even imagine trying to move in all of that snow. Who wants to think about moving, you know, moving trucks and that whole process? But as a buyer, from a buyer perspective, and Cindy and I are both, you know, very strong buyer's agents, and Cindy enjoys working with buyers a lot, too. You don't want to buy a house that has snow on the roof. You can't see the foundation. It was really hard because you couldn't see a lot of the deficiencies of a house because of all the snow, so no one wanted to take the risk. There were some people who did buy during that time. Sometimes you have to. The beginning of the year, we tend to see a lot of people moving. C-level executives are moving at the beginning of the year. There's a lot of transition going on in big companies. Boston, we're very fortunate here. We have financial hub, we're education hub, we're a medical hub. So we have people coming in and out from other states. So some things did sell, higher things sell at the beginning of the year, I find. But people, the snow would melt and they get to spring, they're like, oh, there is no lawn, things like that. Or, oh, you forgot your big wheel. You know what I mean? Like, there's all kinds of stuff after that. So we caught up, which was really, really great. This year, I feel like it's been a nice, slow, easy pace. People coming on the market sooner than they did last year. The spring market really is.
Sure. February. And we'll talk about that in our next segment.
Yeah.
We'll definitely want to, you know, tease that, you know, it's things are looking up so far this season. John, did you want to chime in regards to, because it was interesting, and thank you very much for bringing it up, Sharon, as to looking at your numbers and how the start of 2015 was, you know, a lot of things were at a standstill because of New England, the New England weather.
Yeah, it certainly was a horrible time in the real estate market. It did slow down, and it's hard for us to remember how bad it was. We get a few sunny days, and we totally forget how bad it was. I have a bocce court in my backyard, as you know.
I was going to mention that to you, you know. I was going to throw that in my next segment, but seeing that you brought it up.
Yeah, we have a...
folks don't realize it, but John is a world... he's got a world-famous bocce court in his yard there have been live broadcast. Radio stations have done live broadcasts of this event, and I think there's even a plaque that hangs on a tavern wall somewhere.
Yes, the winner gets to take home the plaque.
Do we get invited this year?
Sure, come on over. It's always the Friday closest to the longest day of the year, so it's usually around June 21st.
Yeah, you got to weed out the guys with the strong language, but other than that, it's a good time.
It's a very, very competitive sport, let me tell you that. But what I'm saying is we have a scoreboard at the back of the bocce court, and the snow covered the whole higher than the scoreboard.
That's fantastic.
How I measured how deep the snow was. So it was incredible, difficult time for real estate people to get people interested in thinking about buying a home. Mm-hmm. And there was a story that happened at the registry when somebody actually had the seller sign an affidavit that, yes, there is a lawn under all that snow, because nobody could ever verify that for months.
Really?
Remember there were bets as to how long it would take for that big snow pile to melt? I think WATD did that.
Oh, yeah. We did that. Lenny Koppenrath, who did that. We did it at the Hanover Mall, and it was a contest as to when the very last crumb of snow
would melt.
would melt in the parking lot.
Yeah, but as Sharon said, it really did double up and really pick up in the spring, and people were waiting. There was a lot of pent-up demand. And that's why we had such a good year in 15, because there were people that were ready to go forward. And part of the reason is because when values go up, many people who had taken loans out before are no longer underwater, meaning their mortgages are no longer higher than the values of their home. So all of that combined into a better selling market.
And that's the voice of John Buckley, Plymouth County Register of Deeds, joined with Sharon McNamara and Cindy Ford, both from Boston Connect. I want to ask you ladies is to give me what was the popular type of property, or what was the prop what was the popular area on the South Shore that you seemed like you were doing? You couldn't find enough inventory in those areas, if you will.
This year, last year?
That could be any town. To be honest with you, that could be any town on the South Shore. The inventory levels are very, very low everywhere. So it's difficult. Someone that is used to taking a buyer out in one day with, as Sharon would say, a granola bar and a bottle of water and finding a house and putting an offer and getting an accepted offer and moving on, I'm showing 30, 40, 50 properties to a client because there's not a lot of inventory. And I'm talking about that in several towns. We're looking in many, many towns. But
there wasn't a particular community that you found that people were, when you would field the call or if they would have a different communities that they were on their wish list, they were looking for a home or a property that they would say, I'm looking for something in Cohasset. I'm looking waterfront. I'm looking for somewhere that's quiet and has, the certain amenities that come with looking for a home, and you want to be close to a shopping mall, or the school system has to be, a certain timber.
I would say that for me personally, I had difficulties in the Hanover area, in Hanover, that type of area. Plymouth is a large town, so I can generally, if you're okay with different areas of Plymouth. Some people don't want to be further down at exit 2 or something like that. But it was difficult for me. And see, my clients, they were looking in towns they ordinarily wouldn't look in because of the lack of inventory in Weymouth and Braintree. I couldn't even view a house with a client because it would go on the market that day. We would get there at 3 p.m. I'd get a phone call from the listing agent that they had already accepted an offer.
And is that because Weymouth and Braintree are almost like the areas, folks who may not be able to afford home or housing in Boston, or maybe there's not inventory in Boston that's attainable, that those are the areas that are just on the cusp of the Boston area for a quicker travel in and out of the city?
It's for the younger couples that are working in Boston. That was my clientele, that are working in Boston and want to be close. They want to be close to the city. They want to be close to the train station because they're not driving in and all that traffic. So in things sell very high and very small properties, like 1,000 square feet, 450,000. I'm going to an open house with a client, and there must be at least 50 cars on that street, and I'm not kidding. And you can't even touch that in multiple offers. Like, you can't even touch it in the Braintree, Quincy, and a lot of the Weymouth area as well. That's been a struggle for me with my clients for about a year now.
And does that seem like that's going to be something that could be long-term? Is this something that is going to be a trend for many years to come for the Weymouth Braintree area to be able to get inventory that you're able to attain and be able to turn around?
I honestly have no idea, so I'm going to let Sharon speak to that because she's the wicked smart one. I'm wicked cute. She's wicked smart.
Yes, and I will give her that for sure. I was a lot cuter 5 years ago, by the way, before I opened up my real estate office, just so you know. But and we just opened up another office, too. So we have one office here in the Pembroke area, so we touch all of the communities here. But we just opened an office in Bridgewater. John, I'm not even sure if you're familiar with that.
Very nice.
So now we can connect Boston to the South Shore through real estate. State going up Route 24 or up Route 3, and we'll soon be opening a Dorchester office too. So it will be a nice little connection for us. But what I was finding last year and was continuing on into this year is Boston has become very untouchable for a lot of people. So when I grew up in Dorchester, we used to go to parties in these apartments in Southie, which are now turned into condos that are selling for $600,000, $700,000, $800,000, $900,000.
Wow.
In a day. So that's the problem, is there that younger group that really want to live in the city just can't afford it. So they are sticking in that Braintree, Weymouth, Quincy.
It isn't a suburbia dream where you're making the money by traveling to an urban center, but yet you're living in suburbia with the white picket fence and,
different demographics. You had asked Cindy that question too, like what was selling more? There were pockets of every single town that were selling really quickly, but there are pockets that aren't selling at all either.
What seems to be the communities that you have inventory, but yet it takes longer for you to be able to, get a PNS?
Yeah. So one of the issues that we have is generally everything is selling right now. So we literally put a house on the market, you know, an antique home. It was on for $399. We were getting offers for $49,000 over asking. Okay. So what I'm seeing right now, and John is familiar with these years too, 2004, 2005, when people were making decisions buying a home based more on emotion than value. Mm. The difference now than what we had then is all the regulations have changed when it comes to appraisal process. So now the house has to appraise. So unless the person is paying cash and they're willing to pay over, you know. So we don't have that. We're climbing 8% over what we were in 2014 and 2015. Okay. But it's going to be slow and easy.
Okay. So what we're going to do is we are going to step aside just for a moment. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what we've seen trending in 2016 and also just kind of as a refresher. Maybe it's been a while since you've sold a home or that you've looked to purchase a property. We get two of the best here from Boston Connect, and we also have John, Plymouth County Register of Deeds, who's also going to be here to chat. You again are listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we are back here on Monday Night Talk. Now, if you have missed any segment during tonight's program, or maybe there's a previous segment that you were sitting in your car driving home during your commute during the evening, you can always go to the WATD homepage, 959WATD.com, and scroll down and click on the Monday Night Talk banner. And those, that'll lead you right to the podcast site. It's that easy. And usually, depending on the individuals that we have here and the topic that we talk about, I do try to make sure that we take a picture so you can see what they look like when they're in studio. And if they have pertinent information, if they have a website, if they have a Facebook page, stuff like that, we do put that information. It's a link that you just click. It's that easy. We try to be user-friendly if we can here on Monday Night Talk. And the conversation continues with Sharon McNamara, Cindy Ford from Boston Connect, as well as Mr. John Buckley with the world-famous bocce court at his home. And now that I just understand it, you can measure snow. You should talk to Rob Gilman because he's always looking for spotters when it comes what's going on with the weather and how many inches of snow are piling up in their backyards. But John, of course, being the Plymouth County Register of Deeds, and we've been talking about real estate. The last segment, we were talking a little bit about the trends in 2015, what we saw. We do this on a regular basis. We try to. And Sharon has always been great to come in along with John. And now we have Cindy being a part of the conversation as well. As I start things off, John, I'll have you kind of give folks, if folks want to follow along with some of the information that we've talked about that you give out on a regular basis, whether it's to Dave Skill when you talk to him on a monthly basis in the newsroom, on the air in the morning, if they want to kind of keep an eye on that stuff, because people love statistics, how can they find out information as to how things are trending in the real estate market?
Well, if they went to our website, PlymouthDeeds.org, under the Registers Report, you can get reports of every month back for like 5 or 6 years, and you can compare the trends in sales, mortgages, foreclosure deeds, notices, average sale prices, and everything relevant to the real estate market.
Any pictures of your bocce court?
Not on my registry site.
Just kidding. And Cindy, as far as if folks wanted to reach out to you as an associate broker or want to ask you any questions, how can they do that?
781-367-4419 or cford@bostonconnect.com.
And then we turn it over to Sharon. Of course, I'm sure you have a fantastic website and way for folks to be able to get in touch with you or any of your brokers.
Yeah, the new website that we have at the office is wonderful. We just launched that a couple weeks ago, bostonconnect.com. So you can find all the information there. Open houses, search for houses, all that. And you can reach me at 781-826-8000 or you can text me, call me on my cell phone, 781-294-4848.
What has it been like so far? Here we are. It's we're near the end of April, May. We're on the doorstep here. What has it been like for the first 4 months, for the first quarter of 2016 when it comes to real estate?
Fast and furious.
Really?
It really has been fast and furious, and I'm sure the registry is seeing the same numbers that we're seeing for first quarter. Things, you know, homes are selling really fast, and I think, again, it goes back to the weather. It's been pretty good weather, and we
would
see.
Do we even have a winter?
Well, you know, it's funny. We really didn't, but then we would have a couple of those snowstorms, and then that week would be very slow. So the weather is definitely the predictor of how our seasons are going to, you know, how our numbers are going to be for, you know, every quarter. Our office, personally, has done really, really well. We were looking at some numbers yesterday because one of our agents has a big presentation today for a new subdivision. So we were looking at numbers, and we are, Boston Connect Real Estate is number 12 in units sold of all firms in Massachusetts for Plymouth County. So pretty good, huh?
That's great.
Yeah. I look at John like, you're the guy there.
What do you say?
Plymouth County. But we are seeing things selling really fast. I just, some quick numbers to year-to-date sold. This time last year, we sold 954 homes. So far this year, we've sold 1,247. So we're definitely selling more. Inventory-wise, when you look at Plymouth County as a whole, there's less inventory. You'd be surprised if you look at the numbers because it seems like a lot lower. I just feel like maybe there's more buyers out there. That's why we're seeing, like it feels like there's less and less inventory. But really, overall, there's probably 250 less homes maybe on the market for Plymouth County. But if I just did pockets of towns, I just ran that number. So I did Scituate, Marshfield, Norwell, Hanover, Pembroke, Kingston, and Hingham. We literally have more inventory this year than we did, we have more inventory this year than we did last year. We just happen to have more buyers out there. I find that interesting.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I think, well, one thing I can't see from the report I ran, by the way, is how many of those are under agreement and how many of those have accepted offers.
Okay.
That's the difference. So we might have the same amount of houses on, but we don't have that many available to really purchase. They're all under agreement. And when I say they go under agreement in one day, they go under agreement in one day. We have, one of our agents had an open house in Quincy. 60 couples came through the house. That's 120 people roaming through a house in Quincy with multiple offers. We are doing spreadsheets now, 8 offers on a property. One of our agents had something in Hull, 5 offers on a property. People are doing escalating clauses to be the winner of the house. You know, it's hectic out there. So have your pre-approval letter ready if you think you're going to buy a house, by the way.
You want to add anything in, Cindy?
I would just agree with Sharon that, you know, I think my last 8 or 9 listings all went under agreement in 24 hours with multiple offers. And a couple of them were literally Christmas Eve at 10 o'clock at night. I was accepting offers on a property that I really didn't want to put on the 24th of December, put it on, and 2 properties, and they both had accepted offers that day.
What's that like?
It's crazy because sometimes, you know, you try and educate your seller as you try and educate your buyer, and some people would say, well, you know, a real estate agent might put it on for less than what it's worth, but we do our due diligence and we bring you our comparative market analysis and show you statistics. We don't come up with, you know, the price that we think your house should go on. We give you what other things are selling for and show that to you, and it's your decision at the end of the day what you want your property to go on for. But I have to now tell everyone, you know, and I don't like to set expectations, but be prepared that I'm going to sit with you with multiple offers on your property, and it's probably not going to last the week is what I try and say, and they don't. They're not lasting even 3 days. They go on I'll have an open house and I won't have any showings prior to the open house, but in that open house, it's crazy, and then you'll get 4 or 5 offers that night on the house. Sharon?
Sure.
Yeah. And one of the bigger problems that we're seeing, Kevin, is that people have nowhere to go. So now we have home sale contingencies, like seller to find suitable housing. So that ends up being another whole issue, and the attorneys are working really hard to protect people so they're not homeless. Mm. So this one house that I had several offers, also somebody offered free pizza for a year. They own a pizzeria to go along with their offer. I am not
awesome.
Kidding. Yes. And, you know, but my client has to find a house. The problem is that where they're moving up to, that first home generation and demographic, those are the ones that are out there very eager. You asked Cindy the question, and I'm going to answer it for me personally.
Yep.
It makes me uneasy. When people are making decisions and, you know, And it's hard. I don't want to say we have wonderful agents in the area, but sometimes agents are making decisions based on trying to get the house sold themselves, which doesn't get your client the opportunity to get in there. So that's one part of it. But then our clients are making decisions based on emotion, and we try to calm that down. It was very uneasy for me in 2005 as well, that it was just too fast-paced for me. I like everyone to slow it down, make realist, good decisions.
Well, you don't want to have buyer's remorse either. You don't want to have somebody who you know, they rush into something and then realize afterwards that, well, maybe...
I don't understand. Maybe the issue when the attorneys are working
to protect people so they know. I have that on
silence. Siri, I told you, not until after the show. My goodness. Only in live radio, folks.
I have the speaker
only
off.
In live radio. But no, I know buyers, I think buyers and sellers are more educated today than ever before, whether it's the advent of cable and some of the shows that you can see these days, or the internet, or just the quality of folks who are out there showing the properties. I think it's much. Wouldn't you agree, John?
Yeah, well, I think there's certainly a lot more of a requirement to share information with people. Even the lenders now have to disclose everything way further in advance.
There's a lot of safeguards that are in place.
Right. But, you know, back on the issue of comparing 2015 with 2016, there's one statistic that I think really shows that in great fashion. The total sales value for the first quarter of 2015 was about $496 million, as compared to the first quarter of 16, $681 million. That's a 37% increase in sales value comparing the two periods. And clearly, last year's snowstorms had an impact on that, but it is showing dramatically how hot the marketplace is now.
If I can kind of throw a little curveball at you.
Sure.
I know that you keep an eye on the trends with what goes on in your region, the county, Plymouth County. How often do you find yourself looking at other counties around the Commonwealth and comparing Plymouth County with whether it's Essex or Bristol or Norfolk? How do you ever find yourself doing that just to kind of see how Plymouth County is doing the ebb and flow of real estate sales and other statistics?
Yeah, I think within 495, for example, outside of the issue of Boston, we're all pretty much the same.
Okay.
I mean, Boston is such an incredibly hot market that it's impossible to find anything. And once you get out to the Golden West.
Is that what we're calling it?
Housing prices are behind our values. We're always kind of catching up. As you get away, the further you get away from Boston, the more the impact is on the values.
Okay.
Norfolk County's values, while the paces are about the same, the values are less as you work your way away from the city of Boston.
Is it because of, and maybe it's a common sense question I'm asking, but, you know, if somebody is looking for careers and they're looking to make the big money, unless you're a doctor, somebody, if you're looking to get into certain industries, usually a center like Boston or New York or Washington, D.C., are where some of the higher salaries are. And people tend to trend to be closer towards a Boston area. That's why you see Weymouth and Braintree being communities that people are kind of, they're landing in because they want to be close to the city but not have to pay that astronomical rent. Is that basically what it is?
Well, I happen to think that a lot of the younger people want to be more closer to the city or in the city, and that is kind of siphoning off purchases out in our area,
yep,
of Massachusetts. But I think that there are costs involved, the time of commuting, costs of commuting,
sure,
that all get factored into it. And that's, I mean, who would want to commute to Boston from Hudson on a daily basis or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
So that's, I think all of that is a factor.
Okay.
I mean, the great thing is once you have commuter rail in an area, that impacts your sales value. And obviously that's
one of those,
affected
those specific amenities that you know, right, you can hop on the train and
sure,
absolutely. I want to kind of another statistic, if you could, to compare, doing a comparison between the first quarter of 2016 compared to 2015. How are things going as far as foreclosures? Is there are we still seeing success in that area, or is there any differences?
Well, as I mentioned, I believe that last year and even currently, lenders are trying to clear their files. So over the first 3 months of 2016, there's been a 73% increase in foreclosure deeds. Now, the numbers are smaller than they were during the very difficult years, but still comparing this year to last year, it's very significant. And foreclosure notices are up 57% for the first quarter. So there are a lot of people that are in trouble. I advise anyone out there that's experiencing difficulty.
Seek help.
Seek help. Don't wait. The longer you wait, the more difficult it is. Talk to a federal housing counselor. They can really do great things about modifying your loan, and don't be embarrassed about that. We have a great relationship with some of the federal housing counselors. We'll actually send out their information through our letterhead,
yep,
so people would open it and contact them right away.
And there are a lot of communities, especially in the bigger urban centers, right, where you'll find it in Brockton and other communities where they'll have workshops to help those who are having problems with their mortgage, or maybe they've gotten into a little bit of trouble, and there's ways around it instead of just letting it go on the slide and losing your home.
Right, and there are specific programs to help people.
Correct. Let's put our hats on as far as if somebody is looking to purchase a home. We turn to Sharon and Cindy here from Boston Connect. Give me some of the top tips that we want to remind our listeners who are listening right now, mm-hmm, it's a first time for them being in the market, or maybe it's something they haven't done in a while. What are some of the things that they should keep in mind if they're looking for a new home, if they're looking to move, whether it's to sell their home or to purchase a new home? Some of the things that you would tell them if they called you.
Yeah, and it's funny, the two demographics that you just mentioned are basically in the same exact place, because people who haven't sold their home in 25 years, it's like doing it completely over for the first time, because everything has changed so much since the time they originally bought their house 25, 35 years
right
ago. So it really is like working with first-time home buyers in both demographics.
Things change.
Yes, and navigating home buying and home selling at the same time is very difficult to do, because it's what came first, you know, the chicken or the egg. Do we sell first? Well, if you decide to sell first, you may not have a place to go. If you,
yeah, we talked about that. You just talked about that.
Yeah. So, and that's the demographic that I'm thinking about, is that, you know, the boomers, you know, they want to get
a lot of them.
Yeah. They want to get rid of those 4-bedroom colonials. And that's really the stall I see in the inventory, is that the people who, you know, the first time home buyer home, let's just say it's a smaller cape or a ranch, they can't sell that until the boomers are selling those 4-bedroom colonials.
Right.
Well, the 4-bedroom, they're not willing to leave and have no place to go. So the 55-plus developments that we're seeing, like the condos and things like that, you want to talk about fast and furious, one of those comes on the market and they are sold within an hour.
Poof.
Gone.
Good.
So now,
blink of an eye.
Yeah, you only have a little pockets of people with these 4-bedroom colonials to sell. So until we can get more of them to purchase, and that's why new construction has been great too. I don't know if you do statistics on that, but new construction has been great. And if we have more of those developments, I feel like it would speed up the market even more, because then the boomers would have someplace to go. And they want everything that's shiny and new. You know, so we have to get that going. And I guess with putting in an offer, you have to be prepared. You know, we have first-time home buyer workshops at our office as well, and we go through a whole process. And having a team that you can trust is the most important part, because you can't really do this alone anymore.
I will tell you that I'm a big, big fan of HGTV. I don't know if any of you have a chance to watch it, but I'm interested in the shows where a broker will take them around to a couple of different homes, and they have to kind of weigh, okay, does this suit our needs? You know, if the price is right, and if I need to make modifications in order to be able to move it. Is that something that is just a TV show, or is that something that's real life that you deal with, Cindy, from time to time, when people are looking at properties that they have to weigh, is it within, does it fit my budget? And if I'm looking for something that's within my budget range, I'm going to make modifications. Can I do that too?
I find that a lot of the first-time home buyers, they honestly want everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was just happy to have four walls when we bought our first house, and that the windows were held up with wooden spoons.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I needed the wooden spoon to cook, and I thought, oh, now I'm going to have to get that window fixed because I have no wooden spoons left to hold up the window. So they want everything. And the difficult part for me is I look at all of these first-time homebuyers that I love as if they're my children, and I think you're in the $350,000 price range, which is a lot of money, yeah. And we're looking at 800-square-foot ranches. I'm not saying that's bad, but that's a lot of money. And then they have to potentially put a new roof on. The windows need to be replaced. You know, the carpet needs to be ripped up, and there's most likely not hardwood floors underneath. So it's a tough balance, and you try and explain out of the gate. You just try and educate the entire time. I'm not able to find that house for $350,000 with everything done. Mm. And then if I do take them in to a flip house, they see everything that is just looks brand new. I have to look at the quality of the craftsmanship and the work that was done in that property. They're not seeing that. They're seeing the shiny stainless steel appliances. They're seeing the little subway tiles behind the backsplash. They're seeing that it's a new bathroom, that it's painted all Pottery Barn colors. And I'm saying, ooh. Mm. You know, and some of them I'm saying, this was done very well. So it's not easy by any means.
Let's go on the other side of the coin, somebody selling. How often do you come across somebody who they see what they think their home is worth? Mm-hmm. And sometimes when you look at a facsimile of that home and any work or anything that has been done, you have to bring to the realization that you may be overpricing your home for market.
I'm dealing with that with a couple of listings I just recently got where they said we have a new kitchen and the bathrooms have been updated and all that and all the hardwood floors. And I think, well, that's great. And I come in the house and the kitchen was redone 12 to 15 years ago. And it still might be oak, which is not currently in style. And there are laminate countertops. But they believe that that kitchen is new. And it's very well maintained, and the kitchen is in great shape. It's in great shape, and it's not worn.
Yeah.
But that someone else is going to come into that house and immediately. So I have a buyer that I've been taking out in the up to $580,000 price range, and we're looking at these properties that were built in 1992. Sure. They all still have linoleum in the bathrooms and the kitchen. They all have carpet in the living room, the dining room, the bedrooms, no hardwood floors underneath. Uh-huh. And they have the original kitchen. And I can't, I'm looking at it thinking, yeah. I can't justify. Yeah. I don't know how they are justifying this. Because it needs a lot of work.
So as an associate broker, as a broker, how do you find a way to say to them, I see what you're seeing, and just let me just tell you from what I'm seeing. How do you make the translation so where you guys can meet in the middle and be able to help them successfully?
So for me, and I'll let Sharon speak to this as well. For me, I go back and I do my due diligence and I look at all the other comps, and I'm really trying to look very closely at the pictures because these houses have potentially already sold, and I'm thinking, is that kitchen a more updated kitchen? Because I'm trying to understand how the agent potentially justified the price that's on the market for, because I have my clients back. I want to make sure that I'm getting them the best property that I possibly can for the right price. So I sometimes call the agent to try and understand where they got their comps from, because I'm looking at comps and I'm sometimes even going back 12 months because I'm not seeing what they're seeing.
Yep.
And those are the properties that potentially don't go day one. And I'll let Sharon kind of take off of that.
So I think, too, you're thinking more of like from a seller perspective and how we educate the sellers on what the price should be.
Yep.
So I do a two-part CMA, which is a comparative market analysis.
Nice.
And what we do, I go to the house, I walk around, tell me about your updates, tell me about things that you've done, how old is the roof, the heating system, all of those things. We want to compare apples to apples. I bring them into my office, and then I bring up we have a big screen TV in our conference room. I go into MLS, I show them specifically, this is me logging into MLS. This is me picking single family.
Yep.
What's on the market is important to know.
Yep.
what, because that's your competition. Yep. We don't consider other companies or agents competition, but other houses. What is under agreement contingent, because those will be future. Those are going to sell within 45 days.
Yep.
So we want to know what those are going to sell for. And the sold's the most important. So I bring that right up and I'll say, what style home? Colonial. Perfect. Then they're seeing the numbers as well, because when you just go with paper and say, well, here are the four comps I chose, you don't see everything. So you don't see the higher ones, the lower ones. You don't see everything in between. And I pick and choose with them so they can clearly see, do you think that this kitchen is similar to yours? So they're basically giving me the answer while we're there. And I say, your home is not worth, is the value of your home is not what I want, what I need, and what I have to have. It's what other properties similar to yours have sold for, because the appraiser is going in there as well. We have to sell this house twice, once to the buyer, once to an appraiser. He's looking 6 months back, a radius generally of a mile. So you have to be very careful when you're doing that. And it's a false expectation, because the market is fast and furious, that the value is increasing at that same rate. It is not.
Okay. We've had a fantastic conversation with Sharon McNamara and Cindy Ford from Boston Connect. Also, John Buckley, who's been, again, it's always great to have you here. He's the Plymouth County Register of Deeds. John, if you could answer a question she had asked earlier, you don't keep numbers as far as new construction, do you?
No, we just track what is recorded.
All right. Just want to make sure, because I know she had asked that and we didn't get an exact answer. If folks want to know, again, track the progress of home sales, foreclosures, all that data, how can they find out that information?
Well, our website is plymouthdeeds.org. There's a whole number of different things that are on there you might find interesting beyond the reports, and invite you to go look at it.
And other than the numbers, also just tell folks that there are other things that the Plymouth County Register of Deeds has for options and things to do, if you could just tease them for a moment.
Yeah, well, we recently put up a fraud alert program if people want to sign in for free and put their email in there. Any time their name gets recorded in the grantor system, they'd get an email so they can see whether somebody's putting something on their property they're unaware of.
Anything that we've overlooked, Sharon or Cindy, in regards to selling homes or getting the word out when it comes to the real estate market, especially where it's the spring market and if folks are gearing up and getting ready?
I just think that, you know what, it's fast and furious this year, and having your team in place, and that includes your real estate agent, your mortgage person, your attorneys, your moving companies, having the best of the best is really important, especially with TRID laws that John is familiar with as well. That's all it has to do with the loan industry.
Yep.
So just really be aware, be smart. Be smart about doing this. It's a lot of money that you're investing, as Cindy has already said.
And anything you want to give folks, your website again, and if they want to get in contact with yourself or Cindy?
Sure. So the website at the office is bostonconnect.com. Again, we just opened our Bridgewater office, so we're excited about that. Grand opening coming up soon.
Yay.
And all our information is on there. So if you want to have somebody, just to give a consultation is free, by the way. We can come out, give you advice. Maybe today isn't the right time to put your house on the market. Maybe tomorrow is, maybe a year from now. Buying a house, it's the same thing. We work with people for 2 years if that's what it takes. So, and Cindy's really, really good at buyer agency, by the way.
And Cindy, you want to say something real quick in closing?
Actually, no. No, I really don't have a whole heck of a lot.
But if they want to get in,
they want to get in touch with me, it's 781-367-4419. And my email is cford@bostonconnect.com. And they can call the office at 781-826-8000.
And I can give you guys another little tip before we segue away and close out this segment. They do a radio show on this station every Saturday. Actually, I look at both of them every Saturday when I'm doing production for other stuff that I do here at the radio station. 10 a.m., set your radio dial, set your alarm clock. Tune in if you are somebody who's looking for information when it comes to the real estate market and certain things, because there's so many other things that we didn't even touch upon today. Tune in to Sharon's show as both her and Cindy do a fantastic job week in and week out talking about the market, what's going on. And I believe you take phone calls, right?
We do take phone calls, and we have a podcast as well.
And they have a podcast as well. So be sure to tune in for that. And if you missed any of the details of this, the two segments that we did with Sharon, Cindy, or John, it'll be up on the podcast site, so tune in for that. Now, we're going to step aside for a moment, but when we come back, We got a very nifty segment coming up. We get some. I got a recorded interview I did with Lou Ferrigno. Remember him, the Incredible Hulk? Him. And we have State Representative Jeff Deal. We're going to speak with him about a couple of things. He's got a busy week ahead for himself. So we'll talk with him in just a few minutes. You are listening to Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.